WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. I'm saying that only for the sake of providing information. It's just me tonight. And we know the deal when it's just me tonight. I got so much to do here. I got so many buttons to press. I got so many things to log and so many things to try and do just to try and get through the next 2 hours. So phone calls, man, I love it when listeners call. But unless it's really urgent, I'm going to ask you, back off the phone tonight just so that I can get through this thing. I really, really need a producer. Really need a producer. If anybody wants to get no money being a radio producer on these weeks when it's just me, hey, I'll take that on. Anyway, there is a storm warning in effect right now. Even as we speak, there is a flash flood warning in effect until, I believe, 11 o'clock tonight, which is kind of late. These are the remnants of Hurricane Barry that are drifting through our area, making things a little bit more dangerous out there than they normally would be. I wouldn't worry too overly much about it. The worst of it seems to be over here in the Boston area. If you were up on the North Shore, we didn't really get much of anything at all out of this. But there is still a chance that we might get a heavy thunderstorm with the dangerous lightning and with the, what else are we looking for with that? The torrential rainfall. That's the one that we want to look out for, is the torrential rainfall. So keep your eye on the sky. If you're going out tonight, if you're going to be driving tonight, be aware of that. In particular, the South Shore is what I'm hearing. Really got hit hard by this thing. So if you're going to be traveling to the south of the city tonight, be very aware that there may be flooded roads. There may be disabled vehicles, there may be poor visibility, all that sort of stuff. Just be mindful if you're going to be out on the roads. Turn your lights on, let people know that you're out there, and be safe if you are heading out. Local news. We've got all kinds of stuff happening locally. We've got breaking local news. As a matter of fact, this from CBS Boston. It broke just a couple of hours ago. Prosecution drops groping case against Kevin Spacey in Nantucket. Prosecutors dropped the groping case against Kevin Spacey on Wednesday. The actor was facing a felony charge of indecent assault and battery on Nantucket. Cayman Islands District Attorney Michael O'Keefe said in a court filing that he was filing a noel prosequi due to the unavailability of the complaining witness. Spacey was accused of groping a then 18-year-old at the island's club car bar 3 years ago. The accuser said Spacey allegedly bought him several alcoholic drinks, then groped him. But the prosecution's case appeared to fall apart at a hearing surrounding the accuser's missing cell phone. The alleged victim asserted his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination and refused to testify further after being questioned about text messages the defense claims were deleted. The cell phone has been a key issue in the case against Spacey. The accuser and his mother, former Boston TV news anchor Heather Unruh, said they gave a cell phone to prosecutors in December of 2017 and that they never got it back. Unruh told investigators that she deleted items concerning her son's, quote, frat boy activities, end quote, from the phone before giving it to authorities. The man's decision not to testify caused Judge Thomas Barrett to question the viability of the case against the two-time Oscar winner, whose career collapsed in 2017 amid a string of sexual misconduct allegations. On Sunday, prosecutors met with the accuser and his family to discuss the case. Quote, the complaining witness was informed that if he chose to continue to invoke his Fifth Amendment right, the case would not be able to go forward, O'Keefe said in a statement. The accuser said he would not waive his Fifth Amendment right, and prosecutors told him the only way to continue the case would be to indict the defendant, immunize the complaining witness, and force his testimony. That process would make further prosecution untenable, O'Keefe said. The accuser's lawyer, Mitchell Garabedian, released a statement Wednesday afternoon. Quote, my client and his family have shown an enormous amount of courage under difficult circumstances. I have no further comment at this time. So there's a couple of things going on here. Number one, Kevin Spacey may have walked on this charge. But Kevin Spacey is, by no circumstances, completely exonerated of everything. As you may know, the allegations against Kevin Spacey began with one actor, Anthony Rapp, who I was in school ties with back in 1991. I've met Anthony. I've worked with Anthony. Anthony is a very nice young man. He's currently on Star Trek. He was in the original Broadway cast of Rent. And Anthony accused Kevin Spacey basically of making inappropriate advances toward him following a party when Rapp was 14 years old. And that opened the floodgates. 2017, December, we get this allegation coming off of Nantucket, and you have a former local news anchor involved. It looks like a slam dunk. Everybody thinks it's a slam dunk. Kevin Spacey goes and puts out this video doing his best House of Cards impression where he says, you know, this isn't what you think it is, and basically claiming he's going to be vindicated. Well, guess what? Here it is. And this case took an absolutely bizarre turn last week when Heather Unruh admitted that she deleted material from the cell phone before she turned it over to detectives. The first rule of evidence, kids, don't touch the evidence. Don't disturb the evidence. Don't delete anything, whether you think it's evidence or not. If a phone is subpoenaed and you delete things from it, it then becomes useless as evidence. She deletes things from the cell phone, and then the cell phone mysteriously disappears. Police say they gave it back to the family. Police have a receipt. Family says, we don't know where the cell phone is. The kid is pleading the fifth. Something about this particular prosecution was not kosher. And it's interesting and perhaps unfortunate to see Mitchell Garabedian involved in this, because Mitchell Garabedian is the attorney who successfully prosecuted so many child abuse cases against the Catholic Church here in Boston. This is the guy that you go to. And if Mitchell Garabedian's name is attached to a child molestation case or an inappropriate sexual conduct case, more or less assuming that it's going to be a slam dunk. I don't know what happened here. I have no idea what happened here. I don't know that this is a setup. I can't imagine that anyone would be foolish enough to try and set up Kevin Spacey. Even if you're a former Boston news anchor, even if you're well known, even if you got the best attorney in town, I don't think anybody's going to try and set this guy up. Maybe, and I hesitate to even put this speculation out there, maybe someone's thinking, you know, we'll file a case, he'll settle, we'll get some money out of this, because, you know, clearly Kevin Spacey and this young man met each other. Okay, they were hanging out in a bar. There is video evidence of this. There are text messages. We don't know where the phone is with the video evidence and the text messages, but it's all there. It all exists. Maybe this young man was not. Because one of the things about it is there's a series of text messages, including one that allegedly either just says help or says help me, that this young man, Heather Unruh's son, sent to a girl that he knew, who's been described as a girlfriend, maybe a girlfriend, may not. I don't know. Don't know them. Don't know the relationship. There are two ways of reading that text message. You can either read that text message as help me, you know, I need assistance right now, please come get me away from this situation. Or, as sort of sarcastic, help me, Kevin Spacey is buying me drinks. So is it sarcasm? Is it serious? A text message taken completely out of context is not going to give you that information. And yet that is a big part of what this case was built out of. So something here went horribly, horribly wrong. I can't tell you what it is. I can tell you that the disappearing cell phone and the admission by the mother that she had deleted things from the cell phone before handing it over to prosecutors basically sank the case. And following the day after that testimony came out, the civil case against Kevin Spacey was dropped. And everyone in the local media started saying, oh, that usually means there's been a settlement. That usually means money has been paid. And I believe I was talking about it a week ago or 2 weeks ago when this was going on. And I said, there's no settlement here. They have no evidence. This whole thing is starting to come apart. And sure enough, a couple of days later, after everyone in the local news said, well, when they dropped the civil case, it usually means there's been a settlement. They came out and said that the civil case had been withdrawn because the accuser was suffering severe emotional distress. I don't know what happened here. I could speculate, but I'm not going to do anyone any favors if I speculate. This isn't a case where you necessarily need to hew exactly to the facts, although we hew to the facts on this show all the time because it's what we do. I can speculate. I can speculate about what that young man's interest in Kevin Spacey might have been, whether or not he was flattered by the attention from Kevin Spacey, what Heather Unruh knows about her son and his personal life. There's a lot of different dimensions to this. What it all amounts to is a case was filed, a heavyweight attorney got involved. The accused was a high-profile, semi-disgraced actor. And the whole thing has come apart now. So somebody went too far with something. I don't know who it is. I can guess who it might be. Leave it to you to decide. The reality is this case never should have been brought in the first place. That's what should not have happened. This case never should have been brought. Kevin Spacey was never, ever going to face any kind of real conviction, any kind of real jail time, anything to do with this case. Whatever happened in that bar 3 years ago was clearly not at the level of criminal conduct. And somebody found that out way after the fact, after all the wheels had been put in motion. And by that point, because the national media is talking about it, because it is such a high-profile case, what do? You got to find a way of getting out of it. And this is where we are right now. Now, this does not mean Kevin Spacey is a good guy. This does not mean Kevin Spacey has never done anything. And anyone who's going to rush out now and say, well, Kevin Spacey, the charges were dropped, I guess he's okay. No, Anthony Rapp's accusation still stands. And I cannot picture Anthony Rapp saying something like that. And again, do I know the guy? Well, no. Have I met him? Have I worked with him? Yes. Doesn't seem like the type of person who is going to go and make up allegations against somebody to boost his career. Doesn't really need the career boost. Already had Star Trek locked in at that point. So, Kevin Spacey still has some things to account for. Still has some things to answer for. You may have heard people talking about, well, Scotland Yard came over and they were talking to him. There is at least one source saying that the Scotland Yard interview with Kevin Spacey had nothing to do with any charges against Kevin Spacey and had everything to do with the Jeffrey Epstein case and the potential involvement of Prince Andrew in the Jeffrey Epstein case. So that will be an interesting one to watch. In other local news, have you been to the Encore Casino yet? Apparently they're doing well. They made $17 million in their first week in operation. That compares to $20 million for the entire month of June for the MGM Springfield. And I'm not terribly surprised. It's a new casino. Everybody's going to get... There weren't the massive traffic jams around there. There was no traffic apocalypse when it opened. And I think possibly because people like me told people like you, stay the heck away from that area. There were some lines for people waiting to get on water shuttles, but that seemed to be the worst of it. So the casino has been open, made $17 million in its first week, and now finds itself on the receiving end of a class action lawsuit from Boston Magazine. The Encore Boston Harbor Casino is getting sued less than a month after opening. The suit alleges that the casino is cheating gamblers at blackjack and slot machines. Now, let me say this. This is a brand new casino. Casinos make money. That's what they do. That's the whole point of running a casino, is to make money. No matter what you do in a casino, you are losing money. You may be losing money in an entertaining way, but you are losing money. Casinos don't have to cheat to rip you off. The only casino in Eastern New England doesn't have to cheat to rip you off, or doesn't have to cheat to get more money. They don't have to do it. Let's see what we've got here. The other side of it is, if a casino gets a reputation for cheating, then no one is going to go to that casino anymore. And if you've just spent north of $1 billion putting up a casino, you probably don't want to get that reputation 2 weeks into your run. Everett's new Encore Casino, says Boston Magazine, may have made millions in its opening week, but a lawsuit filed Monday alleges that some of those funds were acquired through some less than legal means. The class action lawsuit filed in Middlesex Superior Court claims that there are practices in place at both the casino's table games and slot machines that withhold money from winners and violate state gaming regulations. The lawsuit was filed on behalf of A. Richard Schuster of New York. Of course, it's always someone from New York, who visited the casino Thursday. So this guy went to the casino last Thursday and filed his class action lawsuit on Monday. That's some wildly good turnaround. That's some really good turnaround. I don't know if A. Richard Schuster himself is a lawyer, but clearly he has some lawyers on speed dial who can expedite a class action lawsuit over a weekend. Schuster claims he played blackjack at the tables on the casino floor that should have paid him out at 3-2 odds, but he was paid at 6-5 odds instead. Traditional blackjack is paid out at 3-2. We'll get into that in a minute. The lawsuit filed on Schuster's behalf claims that, I don't know who else is in this class action, by the way. This seems to be a class action of one guy. But when you take that class action status, you basically throw a big net out. And they're going to say, they're going to buy ads. And they're going to say, hey, did you play blackjack at Encore Casino in June or early July? You could get money. And everybody runs to their website and signs up. And if you get enough people to sign up, and it looks like there may actually be a viable lawsuit, the casino will settle, the lawyers will get all the money, and everybody in the class action will get 10 bucks in free chips the next time they walk in. That's how these things work. That's what happens. The lawsuit filed on Schuster's behalf claims that at the Encore, the 6-5 payout rule is actually coupled with more rules that tip the scales in favor of the casino even further, giving the casino an advantage beyond what is legally permissible. Quote, with the odds so drastically in its favor, it is unfathomable that a casino would intentionally resort to cheating so as to increase its statistical edge over the player even more. Those are actual italics in the quote. The lawsuit reads, the lawsuit italicizes even more. The Encore Boston Harbor Casino, Encore, has done just that. So what's going on with this? All right. There's another aspect to this. Schuster also claims that when he played the slots, the machines only paid out in whole dollars, withholding his change. Quote, the unredeemed change, therefore, is never returned to the player and is simply added to Encore's coffers, end quote. The lawsuit reads. So what's going on here? Well, a lot of people have been over to the casino since it opened. And over on Reddit, some people got into this and talked about, you know, what is really going on with this and what may be happening here. So the first thing you have is blackjack. Blackjack historically has paid 3-2 odds, which means, and I'm looking for the exact post, if you bet $10 in blackjack, you will get $15 back. So you get your original wager plus half. Recently, in places like Las Vegas and Atlantic City, blackjack has been switching to 6-5 odds. Now, That is not a doubling of 3-2. That's worse. If you bet $10 with 6-5 odds, instead of getting the $15 that you get from 3-2, you get $12. So a 3-2 blackjack table is going to pay you $15 when you hit blackjack on a $10 bet. A 6-5 table is going to pay you $12 on that same $10 bet. Everything else in blackjack, you're just playing to double your money or lose your money. So if you get anything other than a blackjack, you bet $10, you either win $10 or you give up your $10. And why is this important? The odds in blackjack with a 3-2 payout very, very narrowly favor the house. It gives the house about a half a percentage point advantage. A lot of gamblers know this and know that if you know how to play blackjack, it's actually one of the better games you can play in a casino. But the way those odds are calculated is based on the payout. If you're getting $15 on a $10 bet, that because it's all about how much money you potentially win over time. In an infinite number of hands, you are going to get 49.5% of the money, and the house is going to get 50.5% of the money. So if you bet $1 million, $10 at a time, playing blackjack, at the end of it, you're going to have $495,000, and the casino is going to have $505,000. You will lose a little more than half of your money. Sometimes you get on a hot streak and you win. More often than not, the house gets the money. Over your lifetime as a gambler is where these odds come in. But it becomes very, very critical in short duration if you're playing, because getting a $15 payout on a blackjack is much better over the course of a couple of hours than getting a $12 payout. And it actually gives the house a 2% edge instead of that half a percentage point edge. So this is a big deal. Now, there are two questions that you have to answer to satisfy this lawsuit. Number one, did the casino misrepresent the blackjack payouts? If they have signs all over the place that say blackjack pays 3-2, and it's usually right there on the felt, it's right there on the table when the cards are dealt. If the casino is sitting there saying blackjack pays 3-2, and they're only paying you 6-5, then you have a lawsuit because they have lied to you and they have misrepresented the odds at the table. That is an actionable offense, and they will be penalized by the state as well. The other situation where you may have a lawsuit is if they are in violation of state gaming law. No one seems to know exactly what state gaming law says about this. Massachusetts law says you can pay 3-2 on blackjack, or if you are playing single or double deck blackjack, you're using one or two decks, not the shoe, you can pay 6-5. And this is what's happened in Vegas and a lot of other places, is people got sick and tired of shoe blackjack because you can't count cards. So they'll sit there and they'll play single deck blackjack or two deck blackjack where you can count cards. So in order to stop from giving their players a huge advantage, lawmakers have allowed the casinos that deal single deck blackjack and two deck blackjack to pay out at 6-5 and to give the house a 2% edge instead of a half a percentage. Otherwise, they just stop dealing blackjack entirely. Not every casino in Vegas does this, by the way. There are places where you can play single deck blackjack at 3-2 odds. Good luck getting a seat at those tables because they're always packed. Massachusetts gaming law says clearly, if you are dealing single deck blackjack or two deck blackjack, you can pay 6-5. Massachusetts law says if you are dealing out of a shoe, you have to pay 3-2 on a blackjack. Dealing from a shoe, you must pay 3-2. But then they throw in all of these notwithstanding the previous clause comments. And they talk about how if you're dealing from a shoe or an automatic shuffler, only the first two decks need to be in play. So does that mean that you're now dealing two-deck blackjack? And are they interpreting that and saying that means we can pay 6-5 off of a shoe? The law is not clear on this. And a lot of people have looked at this and analyzed this and tried to figure out what the heck is going on with this. And they're not succeeding. They're not doing well at this. So maybe there was a mistake made. Maybe they're trying to rip people off. In all honesty, a brand new casino that has people flooding through the doors, that is building its reputation, that is run by a five-star hotel management company, is not trying to rip people off at a blackjack table. They are not going to sacrifice the future of that casino, which, by the way, I think is very limited, but they're not going to sacrifice the future of that casino out of the gates by ripping people off on blackjack. They're not going to do it. Is it possible that somebody screwed up? Yes. And it, deep in this Reddit thread, and this is single source. This is hearsay. But we have somebody who tells a story, and take this for what it's worth. This is somebody on Reddit. I'm just throwing it out there because it's a story that you can go and find for yourself. There is someone on Reddit who claims his roommate goes to Encore. This guy rarely plays roulette, and when he does, always bets black. So he bets on black. He wins. The croupier, which I believe is the, I believe a blackjack dealer is a croupier. I don't know. The croupier or the blackjack or the roulette, excuse me. The croupier or the roulette operator takes his chips and doesn't pay him. And he says, hey, you need to pay me. I just bet on black. The guy says, no, you didn't. And he says, yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. I always bet black. You need to pay me. And the roulette operator says, nope, no, you didn't. Sorry. Guy goes and gets the pit boss. The pit boss comes over. And he explains the situation to him. And the pit boss says, well, maybe you bet on red by mistake. At which point, this guy says, look, why don't you take a look at the video? Why don't you review the video from the camera pointing at this table? And we can talk about what I bet on. As soon as he says that, the pit boss instructs the roulette operator to give him his money. 10 minutes later, this customer is asked to leave for, quote unquote, making a scene at the roulette table. There is another aspect of this lawsuit where they talked about the slot machines, and the slot machines are not giving you change. You don't actually get money from slot machines. You get a printed paper receipt, and you can do one of two things with that receipt. You can take it to a cashier and get your dollars and cents, or you could put it into a kiosk, which is supposed to give you the dollars and cents. The consensus on Reddit is that those machines sometimes give you change, sometimes will just give you a receipt for your change that you then have to take to the cashier. Apparently, they are only operating two cashier windows at the casino, which is dumb because it's ridiculously popular. But the reason they're doing that is they're trying to get people to use the kiosks. The kiosks don't work. All right. This is a if your business plan involves things that don't function properly, your business plan is wrong. Get some more cashiers in there. That's my advice to Encore if you would like to avoid future lawsuits. But you take all of this together. You take this issue that is reported about what happens at the roulette table, blackjack paying 6 to 5 instead of 3 to 2. The kiosks are sometimes giving change, sometimes giving a receipt. By the way, you can cash in that receipt at any point in time for your change. And what it amounts to is not a casino trying to rip people off. What it amounts to is a casino trying to function. And this is the problem. This is a brand new casino. And not only is this a brand new casino, and by the way, I'm not defending Encore. I'm not defending the Wynn properties. I'm not defending anybody. These things should not be happening. Mistakes are being made. And the management needs to get on top of these mistakes so they don't wind up with more class action lawsuits. But the reality is, this lawsuit is probably going to be thrown out because, at least as far as the slot machines part of it, the getting your change part of it is concerned, it is incorrect. Okay, you can't sue for something that didn't happen. You can't make up your own facts and then file a lawsuit. If the casino gives you a mechanism, however inconvenient, to get your money, then the casino has lived up to its obligation. The kiosks sometimes are giving out change, sometimes they're not. All right, go to a cashier. if the lines at the cashier are too long, the casino should be opening more cashier windows. If they're not doing that, maybe you don't go back to the casino. But they have lived up to their obligation. And if we're talking about 99 cents for somebody who's been gambling, I don't know, hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, I'm not so frugal that I'm going to say that matters. That's really kind of give me a break territory. Oh, I didn't get my additional 12 cents of winnings. You know what? Don't go file a lawsuit over that. Go stand in line with the cashier if that 12 cents is that valuable to you. But most people are going to come to the conclusion that their time is more important than 12 cents. Half an hour in line is probably worth more to you than 12 cents. And if you've ever thrown pennies into one of those leave a penny things at the convenience store, you know what I'm talking about. Okay? Change is a pain in the neck. Should they be paying it out? Yes. Over the course of a year, could that add up to a small amount of money? Yes. But it's nothing compared to what they're making elsewhere. All this comes back to the same thing. This casino is struggling to get off the ground. Why would anyone be surprised by this? This is Eastern Massachusetts. The people who are running this place really don't have a lot of idea of what they're doing. I'm not talking about the high-level management. Okay, I'm not talking about the people who are in charge of the casino operations, the hotel operations. I'm talking about the people on the ground, the people that you are going to come in contact with, your pit bosses, your dealers, your attendants, your cashiers. They're all new at this. They're all brand new at this. It's not like you're going to put an ad in the Boston Globe or in Craigslist and say, now hiring croupiers, and have 500 qualified people show up. If you're lucky, maybe you get a half a dozen that have some kind of casino experience, because we've never had casinos before. This isn't Vegas. We don't have a bunch of out-of-work craps attendants and slot technicians and croupiers sitting around looking for a job. We have a lot of people who have great skills and a willingness to work, who don't know anything about a casino job, who are willing to go in there and learn. And that's what's happening. Everyone's learning on the job. And this casino, and this lawsuit whipped up over a weekend. Over a weekend. Can I tell you something? If I wanted to file a class action lawsuit, it would probably take me months. But this guy in New York somehow manages to get a class action lawsuit filed between the Thursday when he goes to the casino and Monday afternoon. How do you even do that? Somebody explain to me where I can find a lawyer that can get me a class action lawsuit in 72 hours. This is nonsense, to put it kindly. This is growing pains. I don't think anybody here is deliberately trying to rip anybody off. Look, the damage that they would do to their reputation would absolutely sink that casino. It is not worth it to them to do this. What you're seeing is pretty much incompetence and inexperience. There are probably some people who should be fired who are working there, who probably will be. And there are probably some people who are trying to do their very best, who don't quite understand the nature of their job. They'll figure it out. The machine either fix the stupid kiosks that are redeeming people's winnings, or open up more cashier windows. That's simple. And whoever's keeping it at two cashiers during peak times, which is what I'm getting from this, I mean, it's every weekend has been peak time over there, but that's what I'm getting from the Reddit posts. And that wasn't one source. That comes from a lot of people. A lot of people who've been there have said they only have two cashier windows open. When you go in a casino in Vegas, you go to anywhere in Connecticut, they're going to have more than two windows open. Plain Ridge Park has more than two windows open, and that's a fraction of the size of Encore. The reason they don't open the cashier windows is the same reason they keep one cashier at Panera. Please go use our kiosks. I don't want to use your kiosk. Your kiosk doesn't work. Stop trying to force me to deal with your broken business model and serve me. I am your customer. I demand more. Not worth a lawsuit. If this guy is ultimately suing over 12 cents that he didn't get from his slot winnings, that's a real problem. It is WMFO Medford. Disturbing story. Coming out of Newburyport. Newburyport, by the way, former co-host Lisa Nichols. If you find yourself up in the Newburyport area, I think it's Newburyport. Newburyport or Portsmouth, one of them. They're near each other, so if you're in one, you can go to the other. But she's running a butcher shop up there now, which is very, very good from what I hear. I haven't had an opportunity to get up into that part of the state in quite a while. But at some point, I do plan to go up there and see her. Newburyport always struck me as being a pretty... I have spent time up in that part of the North Shore in the past, back in my stand-up comedy days. Always struck me as kind of a laid-back place. Worst thing you're going to have to deal with really is, you know, some of the hardcore townies around there. You know, it's a little bit like the Cape. Most, you know, 99% of the people that you run into are going to be awesome and fun, and you're going to love being there. And then there's that 1% that's just sort of, you know, professional jack-of-all-trades, don't really know what you do for income types hanging around, and every bar seems to have one of those guys in it, except for that one bar that has 90 of those guys in it who've been kicked out of every other bar in town. You know what I'm talking about. You know those guys. But generally speaking, I go up to Newburyport, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty laid back up here. Nice people, nice place to visit. So this is a slightly surprising story to come from there. From CBS Boston. It's hateful. Sign wrongly accuses Newburyport salon owner of being ICE agent. Elaine Devereaux couldn't believe her eyes when she saw the banner plastered right outside of her Newburyport salon. Quote, "It's my life, it's everything," Elaine Devereaux said. The message, several feet wide, twice as tall, and even more offensive to Elaine. "Oh, you couldn't miss it," she explained. "It said my husband's name was an ICE agent and the owner of Salon Bellissimo, and he was a danger to the community." Now, here's what it actually says. This looks like it was painted on a sheet or a large piece of fabric. And this was hung in front of the window of the salon. "ICE agent and owner of Salon Bellissimo is a danger to our community." That's what it says. "ICE agent and owner of Salon Bellissimo is a danger to our community." Mayor Donna Holliday found it absolutely disturbing. Quote, "I'm just really concerned that someone took the time to create this really disturbing and hateful banner, a large banner, and post it right in front of her business so it's the first thing she saw," she said. Quote, "It's hateful, it's inaccurate, and it has caused tremendous anxiety," the mayor added. While Mr. Devereaux does work for Homeland Security, both his wife and the mayor feel the banner couldn't be more false or alarming. Quote, "He is not an ICE agent. That's the thing. I don't know where they got their information from, but it was completely wrong," Devereaux said. "We have no history of ICE agents coming into our community and coming into various businesses and yanking families apart, and we like it that way," Mayor Holliday added. I don't know where that quote comes from, but there you have it. Devereaux said the banner was so big and heavy it was hard to take down. "I couldn't drop it on the road in case it hit a car," she said. Just like it took two people to take the banner down, she believes at least two people had to have hung it. Now here comes the twist. What is even more hurtful, Devereaux came to this country from Ireland and knows firsthand what it takes to become a U.S. citizen. Quote, "In 2011, and it wasn't easy, it was long, but it was fair. You had to go through the proper channels and pay what you have to pay. And I came to this town when I got here, and that was it." She's worked in Newburyport ever since. Quote, "They've always been very nice to me, so I can't picture who would do this," she added. The night before the banner was found, there was a Lights for Liberty rally to protest the treatment of immigrants at detention centers. Police are still investigating whether or not the two are related. Well, Newburyport police, let me save you some time. Yes, I think it is fair to conclude, when you start an investigation, you got to limit your possibilities. You got to say what's likely. You know, everybody in town isn't a suspect. Suspects are people who had motive and access. And if you got a rally going on with a bunch of loose thinking people, and suddenly there's this act of harassment, You want to call it harassment? Maybe you want to call it terrorism. There's this act of harassment foisted upon a local immigrant business owner. Yeah, there's a pretty good chance that those two things are connected. You know, the rally, and the next morning you wake up and an immigrant business owner is being harassed. Yeah. Yes, pretty good chance that those are connected. And you might want to start by reviewing whatever public video you have of the event. By the way, anybody who does something like this is a complete idiot, because it is a guarantee that you are on surveillance video doing this. Pretty much every business, every storefront has got video cameras now. You're not aware that they're there, and that's the whole point. So that when somebody does something like this, it's easy to catch them. And I have a feeling that whoever is responsible for this will be caught. And when they are caught, they should be ruthlessly shamed. And they should, in my opinion, be sent to jail for 60 days. 60 days is 30 days. You can kind of rationalize your way through that. 60 days is long enough to make it unpleasant. Because this is targeted harassment. This is a form of domestic terrorism. Those of you who know history, who clearly would have nothing to do with something like this, because if you know history, you wouldn't do this. If you knew history, you'd understand the tactics that you were using. This is the sort of thing that was done in Europe in the 1930s in various countries as a way of letting certain populations of people know that they were no longer welcome. There were registrations. There were requirements that if you were a Jewish business owner, you had to put a sign in your window saying, this is a Jewish-owned business. And then in the middle of the night, the brown shirts would come by and spray paint Achtung Juden on your window. And then a month later, they'd come by and they'd just smash your windows or set fire to your business. Those are the tactics that these quote-unquote freedom-loving people, these anti-ICE people, these let's all live together in peace and harmony people are using. They're using the same type of tactics that were used by authoritarians and fascists in Europe in the 1930s. And if they had spent 2 minutes in a history class, they would know this and they would know better. And by the way, they got their facts wrong, which doesn't surprise me at all, because people who engage in behavior like this are people who are inevitably going to get their facts wrong. They don't let facts get in the way of their emotions. If they did, you could have a conversation with them. They would be reasonable. They wouldn't be showing up at these rallies. They wouldn't be putting banners up in front of an immigrant-owned business. These are pro-immigrant people targeting an immigrant-owned business based on false information. It is a form of doxing. And for those of you who don't know what doxing is, that's when you take someone's identity and publish it. And you go online and you say, here's a list of ICE agents who live in your area. Do with this what you will. Do with this as you may. It is a quiet and subtle call to violence. It is a quiet and subtle invitation to harass and intimidate. And it is allowed, and in some cases enabled, by social media. Twitter will let you dox people. Facebook will dox people. They'll hand over the information to other people so that they can send it up. This kind of behavior cannot stand in this country. We cannot have this. And the people who engage in this kind of behavior do so because they are trying to silence others. Because they are trying to drive certain people out of our communities. That's not how America works. That's not what this country was founded to be. And we can never expect to have a reasonable debate or a reasonable conversation about any of the issues affecting our world and our lives if we have people engaging in this kind of behavior. And we're going to get into this deeper in the second hour of the show tonight. But one thing that I wanted to bring up in regard to this story is stuff like this is going on every single day. People are getting doxxed left and right. People are getting harassed left and right. And as I said, these are the sort of things that happened in Europe in the 1930s. And the people who are doing this are people who claim to be all about peace and love and togetherness and harmony. Let's support the immigrants. Well, you don't support immigrants by harassing them. I don't care what this woman's husband does. If he was a legitimate ICE agent, this would be that much worse. Because what you are doing is you are inviting violence. You are inviting harassment. In the same way that governments in Europe said, if you are a Jew and you own a business, you have to put this sign up in your window, or we're going to shut your business down. That sign was a calling card to everyone who hated the Jews in Europe to tell them where to go when they wanted to make mischief, when they wanted to spray paint windows or smash windows or burn stores down. That's what's been done here. That's what these peace-loving activists have done. It is designed to harass, intimidate, and silence. And it has had that effect. Because as in Europe in the 1930s, there is a vast silent majority in this country that will not stick their necks up because they don't want to be associated with this. And I get it. I understand. These online mobs, these Twitter mobs, these leftist mobs, these Antifa mobs are frightening. Because they appear out of nowhere, they create chaos, they issue death threats, they will call you and harass you, they will call the police and send a SWAT team to your house. There's all sorts of tactics that they have. And they have been allowed to get away with it because the majority has been silent. Because all the people who sit there and say, that's insane. That's madness. That's nonsense. That shouldn't be allowed. Hold that thought to themselves and don't take action on it. If you want this kind of behavior to stop, and if you value our republic and you value our democracy, then you should. Because there is no room for this. This is not politics. Okay, this is not debate. This is violence and intimidation. We are one step away from the brown shirts. And if you want to disagree with me on that point, if you want to say it's not that bad, I'm going to tell you to go look at what's going on in Portland, Oregon, and Seattle, Washington, where Antifa is in control of the streets. And tell me that that can't happen here, because it can. And it starts with things like this. If someone launched a racial attack against this store, if someone had put up a banner that said, owner is an N-word and dangerous to our community, there would be screaming outrage from everybody. We'll all stand up for that. We'll all stand up against racism. We'll all stand up to somebody who hurts an animal. We'll all stand up to somebody who hurts a kid. This happens, and everybody's just like, yeah, that's a thing. No, it has to be the same. You have to stand up. We have to bring back the idea that certain behavior crosses the line. Maybe the act itself of putting up a banner is nothing more than a nuisance. But what that banner represents, what the people who put up that banner are calling for, is violence and intimidation against an immigrant shop owner. Do you stand for violence and intimidation against an immigrant shop owner? Do you think this woman that came to the United States and works for a living should be harassed and intimidated and receive death threats and have her windows smashed and have her business burned down and everything else that goes along with that banner ever existing? That's where this goes. That's where this goes. Unless everybody who is sitting by quietly saying, I wish this would stop, I wish this would go away, stands up.
We have to stand up. How do you do it? Now, I understand. I get it. You do not want to drag yourself into this. You do not want to be a part of this. You do not want your family exposed to this. I get it. But we are getting to a point in this country where the silent majority cannot afford to be silent anymore. So what do? You support this business. That's the first thing that you do. You know what you do? You find the Facebook page for this business. Okay? And you say, I support you and I'm sorry about what happened here. And when you see someone do that, who whether you know them or not, you add your voice. Here's how this would turn out well. If tomorrow morning, that Facebook page had hundreds of posts for this business, had hundreds of posts on it saying, we support you and we're sorry. We support you and we're sorry. If their Yelp page was suddenly flooded with reviews saying, we support you and we're sorry. Whoever did this needs to be held to account. Whoever did this needs to be brought to justice. That's what you say. We support you. We're sorry this happened to you. We hope whoever did this is brought to justice. If you flood the Newburyport Police Department Facebook page and Twitter feed saying, did you catch him yet? Did you catch him yet? Did you catch him yet? What's happening with the investigation? If you put the pressure on this, and that's all you got to do, Facebook post, Yelp review, Twitter post. You start seeing hundreds of people, thousands of people in this state standing up to that and standing with this business owner. This behavior will stop immediately. Because the one thing that I can tell you about the people who put this banner up is they are cowards. They are cowards who sneak around in the middle of the night, who sneak around in their mobs with their faces covered and rely on anonymity to commit their acts of harassment and terror and intimidation against everybody else. The easiest way to stop a mob is to show that there is greater solidarity among the people than there is within the mob. They will break up and scurry back to their little holes. But you have to do your part. 855-915-9636. Don't call. Not that I don't want to hear from you. Not that I don't love you. I love it when people call. I love talking to listeners. I just don't have Shay here tonight to help me deal with the phones and everything else that's going on. And there is a lot going on. As I mentioned, the second half, we're going to talk a little bit. I'm not going to go off on a big rant about this, okay? It's not, don't turn off the dial and be like, oh God, here he goes again. We're going to talk about Antifa. And we're going to talk about a couple of things that have happened over the last couple of weeks. There's also a couple of fairly important breaking stories from the last couple of days that I'm going to get into after the break. So, stick around. I promise it's not going to get too crazy. I'm not going to get too ranty on you. In the meantime, I think it's this
buying
button.
Thing.
Oh, my God. This is the problem. I got to press all these buttons, and somehow radio is supposed to come out of this. I don't know why I can't just automate everything around here.
Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. So tonight, we still have that flood warning in effect until 11 o'clock tonight. There could still be some heavy lightning, torrential rain, mostly to the south of the city, but could happen anywhere. So be mindful if you're out on the road tonight. Temperatures will fall to 70 degrees as the remnants of Hurricane Barry move out. Tomorrow, expect some lingering showers, high in the mid-70s, low in the mid-60s. Friday, the heat is on. 90 under partly cloudy skies, high humidity, low around 80 Friday night. And then Saturday, get set. We could be setting a new record. Temperature, 99 degrees. That's what they're predicting for your afternoon high, 99 degrees. Oppressively humid, because that makes it more fun. And low of about 80 on Saturday. Sunday, a little bit more tolerable, 92 degrees and oppressively humid. The temperature's falling back into the mid-70s. Ooh, chilly Sunday night. Then next week, we're going to move into rain and cooler. So Saturday, Sunday, be careful, especially if you're not used to being out in the heat. If you're supposed to work outdoors, you got outdoor plans, you may really want to reevaluate that on Saturday. Because this is going to be the kind of heat that we see once every 2 or 3 years around here.
855-915-9636 is the telephone number. It is The Big Picture. I am Derek Gary. Shea Spillane should be back with us next week. In the meantime, some songs to celebrate the heat and summer, because we're here now, and more breaking news and what's happening with Antifa in this country right after this here on WMFO Medford.
You're not wired to have a response to this sound. You're neutral to it. You hear it every time you finish a meal and never feel anything. But if we were able to associate this sound with a new stimulus, save the food. We've achieved pulling a natural response from you. Save the food. Why are we doing this, you may ask? Save the food. Because this ad is trying to change your after-meal behavior through brainwashing. Because food waste costs the average family $1,500 a year. Save the food. Cha-ching. And $1,500 extra is like getting a pay raise. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Which could pay for your child's braces. Save the food. Cha-ching.
You're promoted.
Check out my braces.
So when you hear this sound, rethink your behavior. Cook it, store it, share it. Just don't waste it. For tips and recipes, visit SaveTheFood.com. Brought to you by NRDC and the Ad Council.
Any time is a...